Welcome to Left Out with Adam Grimm and Logan Davis, a weekly show where we discuss all things sports, from the controversial to lighthearted topics around the country. Now let's go to the host. This is Left Out.
What's up, sports fans? It's Logan Davis.
And I'm Adam Grimm, recording from Raymond James Stadium.
It's February 6th, and welcome to episode 11. Make sure to follow us or subscribe on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter as well, at LeftOutOfficial.
Today, it is all about Super Bowl Sunday. From looking back at some of our previous best memories and looking ahead to tomorrow's game, we break down the biggest game in sports. And what better way to get it started than looking at some of the possible X factors in this year's game?
Let the game begin.
It's time to get this week started with the tip-off.
With this week's matchup being between two of the best quarterbacks of all time, people tend to focus on the narrative of the game. But football is obviously a team sport, and Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes will never both be on the field for a snap.
Because of this aspect, we wanted to take a closer look at who the real difference makers will be on both sides of the ball for each team, giving our X factors for tomorrow's game. And Logan, I'll let you start with your X factor for the Chiefs offense.
Right, absolutely. I think the two biggest X factors for the Chiefs offense is just Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. Arguably, two of the best five receivers in the league, and I just think Patrick Mahomes having the ability to throw to both of them, if Tampa Bay decides to double one of them, just leads the other to have a tremendous game. So I think they're the biggest X factors.
Mine is going to be the Chiefs offensive line. With both Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher being out for the game, the Buccaneers have been known to produce a lot of pressure throughout this season, with Todd Bowles loving to dial up blitzes, loving to play aggressively on defense. And I think that could be troublesome for the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, and it's going to be interesting to see how he's going to step up to that challenge. Next up will be the Chiefs defense. For me, it's one guy on the edge, and that's Frank Clark. Can the Chiefs produce an edge rush that will force Tom Brady into making a few turnovers like he did last week that the Packers weren't able to capitalize on, but I think that the Chiefs would be able to capitalize on? It's all about setting up the offense well, and I think that if they can get that pass rush going and they can get to Brady, they can force him into some bad throws and maybe set up that lethal offense really well.
Yeah, I also said Frank Clark pretty much all for the same reasons. The only thing I'll say is that I think he's just been a real leader on the defensive side, along with Tyrann Mathieu, and I think those guys and their entire defense kind of been slept on this entire season, so I think they're going to step up in a big way for the Super Bowl tomorrow. And for the Bucs offense, the main guy that I put was Tristan Wirfs, which is the rookie on the offensive line, because he's been playing absolutely incredible and protecting Brady. And I think if he continues to play as well as he has, then Brady will have enough time to make the right passes and not make any turnovers. Obviously, they have Evans, Brown, Godwin, and Fournette, so they have a bunch of offensive weapons, but I think it comes down to the offensive line, just as you said, for the Chiefs.
I think it'll come down to the running backs, and specifically, can they provide solid gains on first down, and can they convert on third and short plays? We know that Steve Spagnuolo has really turned himself into a great defensive coordinator and knows how to use his personnel well on the Chiefs. And if they're unable to get those short yardage gains, those early down gains that they need to set up the passing game well, then I think that the Chiefs are going to be able to take advantage of that all day and really hinder the Buccaneers' passing game more than they would like, more than other teams have in the past. So I think that those two, Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette, are going to have to step up and really carry this offense in the early downs and in short yardage situations. And as for the Bucs defense, I have their cornerbacks, and it comes back to their earlier matchup in the season. We saw Tyreek Hill just have one of the best quarters of all time, and it put the game out of reach for the Buccaneers. And so it'll come down to, do they have somebody who can cover each of these guys on the field with so many dynamic weapons that there are on the Chiefs offense? It's going to be interesting to see, are they going to have somebody to step up and guard Tyreek Hill one-on-one or Travis Kelce one-on-one, because that's going to be necessary for them to slow down this Chiefs offense.
Yeah, for me, I put Vita Vea being back. He came back last game against the Packers, and just really opened up the pass rush for Tampa Bay and got Aaron Rodgers sacked five times. So I think him creating some weaknesses in Kansas City's O-line is going to be critical to kind of get Patrick Mahomes moving, which is, we don't know if his ankle is 100% healthy, as we talked about in earlier episodes, but yeah, he's my guy. And that wraps up the tip-off. Adam now with the news.
Big news, sports fans!
Let's talk about the sports news from around the country.
Yeah, I know I'm not exactly the jockey type, but I watched Hoosiers last night, and I like sports now.
Here are the biggest stories in sports.
News this week in the NFL starting things off. Super Bowl week, but the Chiefs barber earlier this week tested positive for COVID-19 midway through giving haircuts to around 20 players on the team, and among these players was supposedly Patrick Mahomes. Really weird situation that developed there.
Yeah, it's very weird, and also interesting that there wasn't any, I guess, contact tracing, even though he cut all these players' hair. I think he was in mid-cut of one of the players, and so I saw this funny photo on Twitter of a guy with half haircut, which is pretty funny. But I mean, obviously good for the Chiefs that they don't have any guys in COVID protocol, but also kind of sketchy in the same sense.
Yeah, I don't even get why you'd even bother to get a haircut. Why would you risk your spot in the game right now with it being so close? But I mean, look good, feel good, play good. So I guess that has to tie back to it. Outside of the Super Bowl, the Eagles reportedly are looking to trade Carson Wentz as early as this week. And according to reports, the Bears may be the front runner for the trade destination for Carson Wentz.
It would be interesting. Chicago would definitely be rejoicing if they got Carson Wentz because the Nick Foles and Mitchell Trubisky experiment has obviously not worked out. So it would be a great move for the Bears. They have a great defense. And Nagy, thank you. They would be a great pair, him and Wentz. And I think Wentz just obviously needs a fresh starter with a new organization. So it would be a good move for the Bears.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Wentz part of him just needing the fresh start. And I think also for Matt Nagy, just starting over with new quarterbacks. And I think that Carson Wentz can be that guy. I think if you can protect Mitchell Trubisky, if you can give him options to throw to, he can still be a very good quarterback in the NFL. I think that what we have seen this past year is an outlier from who he really is. And I think that in the Bears, that would be a great fit for him with a good offensive mind like Matt Nagy's. And now headed over to the NBA, Kevin Durant does not start last night's game against the Raptors, but then he was pulled in the second half after playing some of the first half because of health and safety protocols where he was contact traced. Really weird situation.
I think what concerns me the most about this is that he played the game. So he played some minutes in the first half and then he gets pulled. The NBA, I feel like, has done a very poor handling of COVID contact tracing. I don't know if you agree with that, Adam, but I just think that there's just been some odd stories like this one where Kevin Durant's, there's literally a video of him sitting on the bench and then all of a sudden some guy just comes over and he starts shaking his head, just angry. And then he tweeted, "Free me." So I don't know what that even means. But the NBA's got to get some more clear guidelines for contact tracing because there's just been some wild stories.
Yeah, outside of the Justin Turner situation after the World Series where he was celebrating with his teammates without a mask on after testing positive, this is by far the worst example in sports of how COVID can really impact a season and things can go wrong. I don't understand how there's like questions about if he's going to be able to go or not because of contact tracing, but then you decide to let him play, but then halfway through you decide, well, actually, I don't think he should be playing. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me what the NBA did last night. And I think it's a terrible example of how they should be dealing with this pandemic.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Really unfortunate situation. But the NBA now also, and the NBAPA, they have decided that they will finalize an agreement for the All-Star game on March 7th in Atlanta by next week.
Obviously good for a fan perspective, but all the superstars like LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, James Harden have all come out and said that they don't know why an All-Star game is being played, just because it's like the 5 days they get off that they're planning to get off before they finalize this All-Star game. So they're trying to use that to reset for the latter half of the season, but now they will show up if they're voted in the game and play, obviously. But if the superstars are not in support, but the Players Association has agreed with the NBA, it really once makes you think that the president, Chris Paul, I believe, if he's really talking to everyone in the league, or is he just talking to a few people? I don't know. It's an interesting situation.
Yeah, and I mean, in the All-Star game, you typically don't have the most interest in it, especially on the defensive end. And so imagine that the players don't even want to be there this year, unlike years past where they've at least shown that they've wanted to be at All-Star weekend. It's just really weird that they would even try and have it, I think. I think that the product would not be as good as we have seen before, even in years past. So I don't think it's a great idea.
And I think also just one more thing. I think at the end of the day, it's the NBA is a business. And so with all the money they lost previously, I think they're just trying to cash in, to be honest.
Headed over to college sports. EA Sports announces the return of their college football video game series, one of the most anticipated games among sports video game fans ever, possibly.
That's right. EA Sports is in the game, is back with college football. I know Adam's extremely excited. I've loved playing all the NCAA football games growing up, so I'm really excited for this to come out on the new, I think it's the new gen consoles, I believe, so I might have to purchase a new one.
Yeah, I played 14 so much that I actually did break the disc from just playing it too much. But let me just say that it's about time. And really, EA just needs to keep this simple. They need to keep it the same as 14, just update the graphics, take out a few of the bugs, just leave it the same. It was a great game. It's one of the best sports video games of all time. It still holds up to this day. Don't try and do too much. Don't try and make this another Madden. Just keep what works well in this video game series, which I think they'll be able to do because actually their college football series is a completely different office from the Madden office. So I hope that that is a good sign for what this means for this game. But that's all the sports news this week. Let's debate a living legend.
It's showtime! And now, the main attraction.
This is what you've been waiting for. Our biggest discussion of the week.
Cool.
It's time for the main event.
Tom Brady is one of the most polarizing athletes of all time. His greatness in winning 6 Super Bowl rings cannot be denied, but that has not stopped some from questioning him. Whether it be the eye test or the label of a system quarterback, Tom Brady still has plenty of doubters. So that leads us to our topic this week. If Tom Brady wins his 7th Super Bowl ring, will he be considered the GOAT with no arguments against him? Logan, I will let you go first.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if Tom Brady wins 7th Super Bowl ring, he's the GOAT. There's no arguments needed. This is his 10th Super Bowl, which is obviously unheard of. And if he wins, it'll be 7-3 overall, which is absolutely incredible. And for all the people who are saying that he's a systems quarterback with the Patriots, he came to a Tampa Bay team with no offseason, no preseason, came in, changed the culture of the locker room, got all these guys to buy in, and led this team to a Super Bowl. So you can't question that he might be the greatest leader ever in a locker room. Obviously, people have said that he's not the most like vocal, but he's vocal when he's needed to be, which I think is huge. And just able to take this team that was 7-9 last season to Super Bowl bound is just absolutely incredible. And if he wins, Tom Brady's the GOAT, and there's no argument at all. Last thing I'll say is that also Tom Brady owns the Super Bowl record for most rings by a player, passing yards, pass attempts, touchdown passes, and completions. And he also has the most playoff wins ever by a player with 33.
Okay, let me preface this argument by saying that I still believe that Tom Brady is the GOAT right now. I believe that there are players who can pass him at this point, and I believe that maybe if he wins a 7th ring, that there still possibly could be others who pass him, but right now he is my GOAT. But let me give you why there may be arguments against him and why I could understand someone's perspective who does not agree with this. Let's go to passer rating in the playoffs. You list all these counting stats, and that's because he's played in the most games. He's played in so many more games than anyone else. But whenever you look at it, who has been the most efficient in the playoffs? Among players who have greater than 150 pass attempts, some names who rank above Tom Brady and as far as passer rating goes, one of the best passing stats in my opinion, include Mark Sanchez and Ken Anderson. Those are two names that, I'm sorry, but if you're the unquestionable GOAT, you should at least be able to be better than they are. And also, his passer rating in the playoffs of 89.9 is currently 20 points lower than Patrick Mahomes, who has a passer rating of almost 110, who has seemingly stepped up every year in the playoffs. And I think that's something incredible. And so let's look at his Super Bowl MVPs, because he's won the most of those. And I'm going to give you two stat lines. The first one is a quarterback who went 16 of 27, threw for 145 yards and one touchdown. The other is a cornerback who had a pick six, a pass defended, seven solo tackles, including a tackle for loss. Who do you think deserves to be MVP of that game?
The defensive tackle. Oh, man.
The cornerback, but yes, Ty Law. You know who won MVP in that game? Tom Brady, despite only leading his offense to 13 points. Again, so one, I don't think that he should have the most Super Bowl MVPs of all time. I think that he should be tied among others with three Super Bowl MVPs. But whenever you look at some of his other quarterback performances in the Super Bowl, they also aren't the most impressive thing in the world. Versus the Panthers in 2004, he was outplayed by Jake Delhomme. The game went into overtime. Patriots get the ball first. They go down and score. But I understand why he won MVP, because Jake Delhomme lost, but it should be noted that Jake Delhomme did outplay him in the Super Bowl. And then against the Seahawks, once again, it's understandable that he did win the MVP, but he also threw two picks in that game, and they really should have lost that game. If you remember, Marshawn Lynch should have gotten the ball on the 1 yard line, and the Seahawks should have won that game. Fair. And you look at the Falcons, that monumental collapse. Never forget on their last drive, whenever Tom Brady threw a dropped interception to Robert Alford. It should have been a second of the game, but Julian Edelman makes a miraculous catch. And then even earlier in that game, the Falcons had the ball around the Patriots' 25-yard line, and instead of running out the clock, they choose to throw the ball, throw an incompletion. Next play, Matt Ryan gets sacked, takes him out of field goal range. Third down, throw another incompletion. So the clock stopped twice, and they were out of field goal range, so they came away with no points on that drive. Realistically, the Falcons should have won that game, but I'll give it to him. He did lead that comeback, and there's nothing that he did wrong other than one dropped interception, which just happened. So that brings me to my last point, and that is the eye test. What does Tom Brady do that is inherently more impressive than any other quarterback during this era? Can you answer that for me?
He wins games, man. He plays to win the game.
That's what I wrote down. He wins. But you know what? He's on the field for half of the game. Wins are won on offense and defense, and I think that you can't ignore that whenever you look at his career. Again, I'm not questioning that Tom Brady is the GOAT right now, but all I'm saying is that Tom Brady will not just be the unquestionable GOAT if he were to win this game. There is still room to unthrone him as the GOAT.
One thing I just want to ask is that, obviously, stat-wise, Tom Brady in the playoffs. Obviously, Mark Sanchez, you said, leads him in QBR, correct?
Quarterback rating.
Passer rating. Quarterback passer rating. Do you think that a GOAT of a position is only meant by individual stat lines? Like, for example, okay, Michael Jordan, obviously the GOAT of basketball, was totally dominant. Literally no one could beat him one-on-one, yada, yada, yada. But he made, if you watch The Last Dance on ESPN, he challenged his teammates. He was a total jerk to them, but he challenged them to be the best. And that's why they won. I mean, like, I think that, yes, Michael Jordan carried them and Scottie Pippen and stuff like that, but they all played together in unison. I think Tom Brady's leadership needs to be more incorporated as why he's the GOAT as well.
I think it's a combination of the two, and that's why he is my GOAT right now, despite all the things that I just listed, is because the wins are able to overcome that. But what I'm saying is that there is room still to unseat him, and that room is by putting up the individual production along with the wins. And I don't know if anyone can do it, but I'm just saying that it is possible. And I mean, Patrick Mahomes is off to a hell of a start for getting to that point. So, I mean, we'll see headed forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Make sure to comment who won this week's debate on our Instagram at LeftOutOfficial. Let's talk about what's happening on the gridiron and the hardwood.
Hello, you play to win the game.
These are the headlines from around the league and association.
It's a make or miss league, baby.
Super Bowl Sunday is finally here, and you know what that means. It's time for Left Out to give our predictions for the big game. Logan, let's hear your analysis on the game first before we hear those predictions, though.
Absolutely. So let's start with just the Chiefs offense. I'm just going to think about it a little bit. I think there's some major question marks. I know you said that their X factor is their offensive line. They've done a great job, but they've lost two of their starters, I believe. One was sidelined with an Achilles injury earlier in the season, and then one just hasn't played. So they have some, you know, kind of late guys coming in, not a lot of experience playing in the Super Bowl. So I think that the Buccaneers can really take advantage of that. And the Bucs have really invested in their front four with Vita Vey, Shaq Barrett, Sue, and Jason Pierre-Paul. And so I just think that if the Buccaneers are going to pressure Patrick Mahomes, it has to be targeting their weakest offensive linemen. And then to flip it, when the Chiefs are on offense, the Bucs are going to have to pray that doubling Tyreek Hill is going to stop him, and maybe to limit Travis Kelce. Just because the last time they played, I think Tyreek Hill had 3 touchdowns and 200 yards by halftime, or 200 plus yards.
Yeah.
So they're just going to have to pray for a miracle that they can slow him down. And last thing I have is that for Kansas City defense, I think every time Tom Brady gets hurt, he statistically plays worse. So I know that Kansas City's defensive coordinator is definitely going to try to sack Tom Brady or hit him as much as possible to get him off of his game. But that is all I have for right now.
Yeah, looking at mine, I came up with 3 big questions that I think will decide this game. First one will be, how will Patrick Mahomes deal with the most pressure he has likely faced all season, maybe even in his entire career? Patrick Mahomes is statistically one of the best quarterbacks of all time under pressure so far in his career. His numbers are through the roof. I think they actually even get better whenever he's put under pressure, which is astonishing that he's able to do that. And he's such a creative player. He can go off script. And Andy Reid obviously has an ingenious mind for football where he can get receivers open. But with as much pressure as he is going to face tomorrow, can he respond to that well? Can he respond to it positively? Second question for me, will the Chiefs defense be able to force mistakes like the Packers did last week, but then be able to capitalize on these mistakes and not avoid some of the big mistakes that the Packers also made on defense? So the Packers were able to force 3 Tom Brady interceptions. And whenever you look at that, you should say that should be a win. But you also look at, they gave up the touchdown with 1 second left in the half to Scotty Miller. You can't have plays like that if you're going to beat Tom Brady. You can't give him these free passes in order to win, because as he's shown time and time throughout his career, he will take advantage of every opportunity that you give him. So they need to limit those mistakes and set up their own team well. The third one is, can Bruce Arians outcoach Andy Reid for 4 quarters? We look at last year, the Chiefs got off to some rough starts in many of their games. But what it came down to was that the Chiefs are the better team for 4 full quarters. And I think that you're going to have to outplay them and outcoach them for 4 quarters if you want to beat them. So for me, those are the 3 keys that I will be looking at in this game to decide who will be the winner.
And to talk about just the coaching, I think a big thing to watch tomorrow is if Bruce Arians commits to his saying, risk it for the biscuit. If he continues to just be aggressive on 4th and 1 or 4th and inches, stuff like that. So I think that's also a big thing to look out for.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to go with a dynamic offense where he's not just relying on Brady to throw it. You're going to have to get those running backs involved, or else I think that the Chiefs defense will be able to step up and make enough plays to get enough stops. So what is your prediction for this week's game?
I'm going to take the Kansas City Chiefs, and I'm going to say 34-31.
The Chiefs are rolling right now. They are the hottest team. They took a Bills team that everybody thought was going to be great and really give them a challenge, and they just ran them out of the building, really. I think that this team is just too good right now. They have too much confidence coming off of last year. There's no Super Bowl hangover from this team, and I think that they will be the first team to repeat as Super Bowl champions since the Patriots did it back in 2003 and 2004. I have the Chiefs winning by a score of 31-24.
Last thing I'll say is, just for this Super Bowl, both of the offensive weapons on both sides is incredible. I mean, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, we got Le'Veon Bell and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and then on the Bucs side, you got Godwin, Gronk, Evans, Antonio Brown. Like, it's just going to be a great game tomorrow. So regardless of the outcome, just enjoy the game of football. And with that, it's time to head to the association and talk about which NBA players we would want to see in the NFL.
Yeah, so obviously surrounded by Super Bowl Sunday, got to make everything about it. So if you could add 1 NBA player to each of the 2 teams, who are you going to add and why? Who are you adding to the Chiefs?
I'm going to add De'Aaron Fox, point guard for the Sacramento Kings, and I'm either going to put him as a corner or maybe a slot receiver. I was going to put him on the Bucks initially, but he is from Louisiana. So I assume that he's kind of a Saints fan, so he probably would not want to be on the Bucs. Obviously, De'Aaron Fox, one of the fastest players, if maybe even the fastest player in the NBA. So I'd love to see him on the football field. And I just think he's just so elusive, and he would be great for the Chiefs.
As I've talked about in week past, the way to beat Tom Brady is to get pressure on him. We've seen it every time throughout his career. Every time teams get pressure on him, that's whenever he's at his worst. So that's what the Chiefs need. They need more help getting pressure on him. A guy who can be quick off the ball on the snap, a big physical, get his hands in the air and deflect passes, disrupt Tom Brady's vision. That guy is Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Oh my gosh.
I think that just his length, getting to the pocket, he's obviously got that spin move to get around to or other players. And so I think that Giannis is the guy who I would go with for the Kansas City Chiefs.
That'd be terrifying. For the Buccaneers, I put Russell Westbrook for free safety. Basically, the secondary needs help for Tampa Bay, but I think Westbrook is a huge competitor, and if he was in an environment like the Super Bowl, he would just elevate his teammates, and so especially that secondary trying to go against Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce.
I think you read my mind for my Bucks pick. I went with De'Aaron Fox. You need somebody in that secondary to keep up with Tyreek Hill and somebody who can go up with him, poke the ball away from him, and I think that guy is De'Aaron Fox, excuse me. He's got the speed to do it, and I think that that's what the Bucks would need to be able to contain Tyreek Hill to the most that you can, obviously. It's a very difficult thing to do. Now we have to come back to reality, and it's time for me to share my most interesting fact that I found this week with you in the College Rundown.
Now, maybe it's just me, but college was very confusing times.
It's the College Rundown, where we break down all the important stories in college football and basketball from this week.
As Adam said, he will be revealing his Super Bowl fact. Let's hear it, Adam.
If I were to give you one guess at a college team who has scored the most points in the Super Bowl, who would you suspect that that team is?
Alabama.
Interesting that you say Alabama. I want you to try and guess how many points Alabama has scored in the Super Bowl.
How many points? Like from the beginning?
Yes. All 54 Super Bowls.
Gosh. 405.
What if I told you were off by 405 points and that an Alabama player has never scored a point in the Super Bowl?
No way. What?
Yes.
What?
Scoring a point is defined as either kicking a field goal, kicking an extra point, running a touchdown, or catching a touchdown. Alabama has never scored a point in the Super Bowl.
Wow. That's crazy. Because you think of like all the best players in the NFL right now are usually from Bama.
Yeah. Wow. Alabama has never scored a point in the Super Bowl.
If only Julio Jones would have scored when he was in the Super Bowl.
Exactly. Too bad he can't score touchdowns.
That's facts.
But the leading team is University of Miami Hurricanes, who lead with 84 points scored. And some surprises that I found on this list include Memphis, who has scored 50 points. Wyoming has scored 30 points. Alabama A&M has scored 18 points. And the Coast Guard Academy has scored more points than Alabama with 1 point scored in the Super Bowl.
What? That's crazy.
Yeah.
What? That's absolutely insane. You say Alabama A&M?
Yes, Alabama A&M. The 18. Best team in Alabama, apparently.
That's actually so wild. Wow, crazy. Do you know what? Yeah, go ahead.
Let me give a shout to Texas A&M, who has 21 points.
Woo, dig them.
And Indiana University, my girlfriend Lauren, also has 20 points. Both more than Texas, who only has 16 points.
Yeah, Texas sucks.
But unfortunately, my Missouri Tigers have 0 points scored in the Super Bowl. But at least we're on par with Alabama. We can hold that high. So
that's fair. Adam, thank you for the interesting fact. I was not expecting that at all.
That was provided by my brother, Steven. And so really, really weird. I never would have guessed that in a million years, that just Alabama hasn't scored in the Super Bowl. Really weird stuff, but now it is time to continue our look back at the history of the Super Bowl, ranking some of the most iconic moments of all time.
It's been a blast, but it's almost time to go. We wrap up this week with the home stretch.
We have reached Super Bowl Sunday, a day that has brought us some of the greatest sports moments of all time. And now we look back to some of the best, where we rank the top five Super Bowl moments of all time. Adam, get us started with number five.
Number five, just a few years ago. Let me preface this by saying that all of these have occurred fairly recently. I don't really look back at some of the super old Super Bowls.
Agreed.
I just sort of know what happened. So my top five are all from this century, I believe. But number five, starting off just a few years ago, the Philly Special. Great play call there by, I'm guessing it was Frank Reich based off of how Doug Peterson's play calling has gone this year. But just the end around reverses, then flipping it to Nick Foles, who's wide open in the end zone, to really put an exclamation point on the first half for the Eagles and put the Patriots out of it, really. Didn't give them a chance to come back in the game.
Yeah, so number five is Super Bowl 43 for me. It's James Harrison's 99-yard pick six off of Kurt Warner when the Cardinals and Steelers played each other. I just remember watching it, and just James Harrison, first of all, is a big man. So seeing that man cook it all the way down to the opposite end zone was just absolutely incredible. And a way to end the Super Bowl as well. So
my number four moment, I think, is one of the more overrated moments, but it's still number four. Again, overrated means that it is thought of higher than it actually is, not that it's not great. That is the helmet catch by David Tyree. Patriots versus Giants, headed down last minute of the game. Pins the ball against his helmet. Eli Manning escapes the rush. Great play there. But yeah, I have that as my number four moment.
My number four moment is also the helmet catch in Super Bowl 42. So I'm just going to let Adam's explanation pretty much describe it. But I was standing up watching this. I wanted the Patriots to win back when I was 7 years old. But seeing that catch was just absolutely incredible. So
my number three moment also heads back to the New York Giants versus the New England Patriots. And that is one of the most underrated moments, in my opinion. And that is Mario Manningham's sideline toe-tapping catch, where Eli Manning just really throws it up to him. Somehow he's able to get both feet down along the sideline. Really an incredible play for me.
The number three moment for me was when Dyson was tackled 1 yard short in the Rams-Titans Super Bowl, I believe in 2000. Obviously, I was maybe 1 year old when this happened, but just watching a bunch of videos and stuff like that, it was pretty incredible how close the Titans got, but sadly, didn't happen.
My number two moment is Santonio Holmes in the corner of the end zone. Did he get both toes down? Yes, he did. Toe tap touchdown against the Cardinals in the final minute to seal their win. Come back. Great play after the Larry Fitzgerald slant that had just given the Cardinals the lead. So yeah, Santonio Holmes catch, number two moment for me.
My number two moment is the Malcolm Butler interception on the goal line in Super Bowl 49. All the Seahawks had to do was just give it to the beast mode, but sadly, poor play calling resulted in Tom Brady earning another Super Bowl ring.
I actually chose to keep that one off of my list because I believe that poor play calling should not justify something being in a top five.
Okay, well, so it's pretty incredible to me. So
I have abstained from keeping it on my list.
Yeah, yeah.
But my number one moment, you already know what it is.
Yeah, I know
it
what
was
it
the
is.
Tackle at the 1 yard line made by the St. Louis Rams. Mike Jones on Kevin Dyson. He did not break the plane. It was an incredible play. And that play means so much to the history of football in St. Louis. The greatest show on turf, capped off by that tackle. It was an incredible play design. If you go back and watch how they did it, the entire idea of the play was to get the tight end to pull Mike Jones off of Kevin Dyson,
mm-hmm.
but he was able to fight through getting pulled off of him by the tight end and make that tackle. So, yeah, great play design by the Titans, but Mike Jones, an even better play, to tackle Kevin Dyson 1 yard short.
Absolutely. There's a great little NFL video, analysis on that, which is pretty awesome, kind of describes the same thing. Okay, so my number one moment is the Patriots 28-3 comeback at Super Bowl 51, but specifically Edelman's catch when he was just, it was juggling in the air, and just the focus that you can just see in his eyes and in the slow motion replay camera was just absolutely incredible. And also, when we were watching the Super Bowl, my entire family was rooting for the Falcons, and I was rooting for the Patriots. And so when they came back, I heavily enjoyed rubbing it in their faces. So,
yeah, let me just say that I think that Julian Edelman is one of the most underrated players of all time in the NFL.
I completely
agree. He's never made a Pro Bowl. I don't know how, But dude just always produces, and he's always just been a rock for whoever the quarterback has been. So shout out to Julian Edelman for not getting the respect that he deserves among the NFL.
Because there have been some bums who've made the Pro Bowl, is all I'm going to say.
Mitch Trubisky has made a Pro Bowl.
He's also the Nickelodeon Most Valuable Player as well. So,
yeah, that's a pretty prestigious award. He's the only one in history to win that. Bet you didn't know that. All right, now it's time for us to tell you about what probably won't happen this week.
General Kenobi, you are a bold one.
Let's hear the blasphemy that you came up with this week.
I believe if Tom Brady wins his seventh ring, the McCourty twins, who currently both play for the New England Patriots, will leave New England and join Tom in Tampa Bay for his second season, and the McCourty twins will win another Super Bowl, and Tom Brady will have 8 rings.
So you predicted them the first time to lose, and then this time to win?
Well, there's a reason.
Covering all your bases.
Well, there's a reason why it's called blasphemy. So,
you just want to be able to say, "I told you so," I guess.
Absolutely.
Now, mine is going to be not that. It's not going to be the Buccaneers win, but it will be that a certain Buccaneers player performs well. A certain Buccaneers player who may or may not have all of his fingers. And that player is Jason Pierre-Paul. I think he has another big day in the Super Bowl. And he's going to create 2 turnovers through his pressure on Patrick Mahomes. I think that they're going to dial up a lot of blitzes. They're going to make him really uncomfortable. And I think that Patrick Mahomes showed last year that he's not invincible to mistakes. But I believe that they will be able to create 2 via their pass rush. Again, I don't think that this is enough for the Buccaneers to win. But Jason Pierre-Paul does have a very, very good game.
Crazy statistic is ever since the firework blew off his hand... he's been phenomenally better. So I obviously attribute that just to him losing a finger, but obviously he's progressed better in his position, but still. Yeah.
Yeah, because he was a stud before that accident. And then there was like 2 years between him being great and that happening where he just like sort of went quiet and flew under the radar. And then that happened and everybody was like, "Oh, wow, that happened to him. His career's really fallen off," but impressive job by him to bring it back. What are you thinking about this week?
Obviously, Super Bowl this weekend. It's going to be a good time. It's always a good time to be with your family and stuff like that. Adam and I will be watching the Super Bowl together. So that will be fun. But this is just a final thought for my dad. It's his birthday this upcoming Monday. Happy birthday, Dad. Thank you for being my greatest role model. And I just appreciate you always encouraging me. So happy birthday, Dr. Davis.
You stole my line. I was going to say happy birthday, Dr. Davis.
What? No way.
Well, no, that's not my final thought. Okay. I was going to say that once you said it.
Okay.
Yeah, I just knew it was your dad's birthday.
Yeah.
You and I are really close.
Yeah, that'd been really weird.
My final thought is on the Super Bowl game itself. And it's one thing. Some of the biggest advertisers in the Super Bowl have been not picking up their spots this year. Obviously, with the pandemic, there has been an impact on a bunch of companies' financial bottom line. So don't expect the commercials to be as great this year. Don't expect your typical Doritos, Budweiser commercials that always make you laugh. Just remember, you can always wait till the commercials to use the bathroom. You never can replace watching that game, though, in real time. So that is my final piece of advice.
You can always use the restroom.
Out of commercials.
I know. You fail to amaze me on these final thoughts, man. All right. Well, with that, that's all we have for this week. As always, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at @LeftOutOfficial and leave any feedback you have for us in our comments. For Adam Grimm, I'm Logan Davis.
And for Logan Davis, I'm Adam Grimm. We'll see you next week.
Bow, 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 bow.